Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and this is a real treat. We're here with the one and only Ernie Isley, who will be participating in this concert at Wolf Trap for Jimi Hendrix for his 75th birthday. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Isley.
Thank you, Jason, for the call.
We're celebrating both Jimmy's, what would have been his 75th birthday, but it's also a 50th anniversary of his D.C. debut at the Ambassador Theater. Explain how you got involved in this. Did Wolf Trap reach out to you, or how did this thing come together?
Well, we had done a tribute to Jimmy last December in New York. And it went very well. And, you know, you have a lot of folks in the audience observing and all that. And somebody, you know, checked it out and said, you know, let's bring that to another venue. And it turns out that the way things work, that we're able to come down to Wolf Trap here in September. So, you know, they just connected the dots and, you know, pretty much got everyone on the same page, and so we're looking forward to doing this show.
That's awesome. Tell our listeners some of the other awesome acts that are going to be on stage with you, and how excited you are to play with some of those guys.
Okay, off the top of my head, I know there's Fishbone. I know there's Nona Hendrix. There's Vernon Reed. After that, it starts to blur a little bit.
That's right. Yeah, but
to be reading off a piece of paper, but it's gonna be quite a few folks, and they can look forward to a dynamite show.
That's so cool. I have the set list here, and I see you guys are opening with Fire, which is awesome, and closing with Purple Haze. Explain why you chose to open and close with those, and maybe some of what else we might hear in between.
Well, I know that those are two of the original signature tunes from the Are You Experienced album, which was out in 67. You know, 50 years ago. And their signature tunes in reference to Jimmy. Not only did he play them, but he wrote them. And I think it's a good way to, you know, start the party. I know we're going to be doing two Isley songs that he first got into the studio, period. He was with the Isley Brothers. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing Testify, which was his very first recording. He took a guitar solo on it. And there was Move Over and Let Me Dance. So, you know, to be starting off with Fire and ending with Purple Haze, that's kind of like the ribbon on a big box of chocolates. As far as his catalog and his music goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I saw some interview, was it CBS Sunday Morning or something, where you were talking about when you guys with the Isley Brothers, when you first hired Jimmy to play with you guys, and he said his guitar was in a pawn shop and he had to put the strings
mm-hmm.
on. Tell our listeners about that, that first meeting.
My brothers were looking for a guitarist, because the guitar player that they had suddenly quit. And make a long story short, they tracked down this guy who had a reputation for, you know, playing well. And turns out he didn't have a guitar because it was in the pawn shop. And when they got the guitar out, he didn't have any strings on it. So after he got the guitar and, you know, restrung it and started playing, you know, Kelly and Ronald, you know, hired him, like, on the spot, and said, you know, he got rehearsals, like a few days from now in New Jersey, and, you know, I can't make rehearsals in New Jersey because I don't have a place to stay. And, all right, so that was solved by him staying at our mother's house, where me and Marvin were mm-hmm. as kids, and that's where they were on their way to my mother's house, and then Kelly said, you know, the guitar you got is a little scruffy looking, and you're going to be playing with us, so we got to get you a new axe. He's like, really? So, yeah, "What kind you want?" He paused and said, "Can I have a white Stratocaster Fender?" He said, "Yes." And, oh my God, he was too through with that. So when he came into the door of our home for the very first time, he had a brand new guitar that he just got that they bought him, and with a brand new case. And Ma's guitar player we just hired is going to be staying in the back room. His name is Jimi Hendrix. Jimmy, this is our mother. Hello, Ms. Isley. And my two little brothers, Marvin and Ernie. Hi. And, you know, he was both a house guest and an employee. And it turns out he was star of the band before the first rehearsal was over. And, you know, I frankly, although I was 11 years old, I had never heard anybody play guitar like that. That was like March of 1963.
Wow.
So before the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
And when, as I said on CBS Morning, when the Beatles played Ed Sullivan in February of 64, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles," you know, I'm sitting on the couch on the left side, and my younger brother Marvin's on the right side, and Jimi Hendrix is in the middle. "Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles," but there was no clap of thunder above our house. You know, you don't know what the future holds. You don't know who you're rubbing elbows with. You don't know where the music business is going to go. And a few days after that was a meeting with all the members of the band, and my oldest brother Kelly took the floor, and amongst other things said, "You know, this English band has changed everything, and I don't know what it's going to be like even for Elvis himself, but I think we're going to be all right because I know the Beatles do shout and twist and shout in their repertoire," which they did.
Right, because you're Isley did that first. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Kelly said, "Now, they got two guitar players, but we got Jimmy." And when he said, "But we got Jimmy," I looked over at Jimmy, and Jimmy was grinning ear to ear at that remark. You know, and like, you know, from that point on, you know, he played all the time. He played very well. I didn't understand why he was practicing so much because he was that good. But, you know, eventually, when the time came, he was certainly ready to show his stuff.
That's so awesome.
And but nobody knew, you know, with the coming of the Beatles that where the music was going to go. And for it to go the way it went with him, you know, we were certainly proud to have his name on the Isley resume, and I know he was proud to have Isley on the Hendrix resume. And, of course, if he had been around when that lady came out, he would have probably given me something between a bear hug and a tackle and said, "How the hell did you ever learn how to..." And I would say, "Man, I was listening to you in the living room, you know, in the dining room."
Yeah.
So that's where, 'cause that's where it started, you know, like, you know, when you say, you know, I was already experienced in 1963,
mm-hmm.
You know. So I had a jump on everybody. You know, you got this guy living in your home for about 2 years, and but I was not a musician when he, while he was there, I really was not. Neither was Marvin. But you know, the way things go is like eventually, like the way things go, and it's marvelous to be a participant in this show at the Wolf Trap on behalf of my family and me.
That's just such an amazing story. You're making my job easier for the piece I got to produce with all these great stories of sitting on the couch with Jimmy.
Yeah,
there's
tons of, you know, somebody's in your house for like 2 years and he's playing guitar every day that you see him. He's playing a guitar, whether it's in the amp or, you know, without the amp. He's playing before rehearsal, during rehearsal, after rehearsal. The ironic thing was, sometimes with the band playing, amongst other things, it's a whole long story, but, you know, the police would come to the house as it got, you know, near night. And, Mrs. Isley, hi, how are you? We're getting, you know, some, you know, inquiries and complaints from the neighbors, you know. Rehearsal, you know, has been going on all day. And, you know, we're standing out here as police. We're hearing a guitar. Just like, yeah, you are hearing a guitar. yeah, you're hearing a guitar. I'm like, yeah, it's true. You are hearing it. And, you know, it's just like, it's a little late. And, you give Jimmy an extra 10, 15, 30 minutes and then say, okay, now you got to cool it. But he was playing all the time. And, you know, and if anybody had a crystal ball, you know, you run down there with a movie camera or
sure.
tape recorder or, you know, and wow, you know, much less the Isley Brothers.
Right, right.
You know, so, you know, it's just an amazing thing the way that everything has transpired, in musically speaking and career-wise.
Was that what made him so great, just how he, you know, that sort of that work ethic and just love of doing it, that he did it all, that he played all the time, or was it kind of sort of a natural gift too, you think?
I'd have to say it's a combination of things. First of all, it is a gift. Certainly a divine gift, and he was inspired to hear the instrument in a certain kind of way, which was beyond the boundaries of what had seemingly been established. And he could play very well. He could flat out play. And much less if he put in all the showmanship stuff that, you know, I'd see him practicing behind the back or through the leg or over the head or one hand or with his teeth or whatever, and then he would spring that as he was developing it in the live show with my brothers. Come on out here, Jimmy, and show him how it's done. You know, he'd be like, oh, wow.
Right.
We didn't know he was going to do that. You know, so it was, the whole thing was, since it involved discovery and practice and learning, I think, on everybody's part, you know, involved. You know, needless to say, it's the more you go into it, the more, in a lot of ways, astonishing it would be, because you have to talk about a lot of different aspects of a person's life, actually, yeah. You know, and his living. So he was, had a great stage presence. He played very well. He learned quick, had a marvelous sense of humor. Had a healthy appetite. He loved, he loved my mother's cooking. as we all did, you know, so and in that way he was receiving from the jump. He was receiving preferential treatment from the first day. He just, you know, his a gentle, harmless spirit of a person. So he was receiving preferential treatment from the first day. None of the other guys in the band got that kind of treatment. You know, they didn't particularly appreciate it, but please. Like, man, this person will do that for, you know, without knowing where it was going to go or how it was going to go.
Wow, that's so wild that you were there for sort of like not even the ground floor, like the ground floor, and watch him come up. I mean,
yes.
that's so great.
Yeah.
if you'll indulge me for 1 second, veering off of Jimmy just for 1 second, just more of a Isley Brothers question. But before Jimmy entered your life, I mean, you said you were you were the younger brother, obviously watching your older brothers at the beginning of the Isleys, and you joined them later. Take me back to sort of memories of when your brothers first broke through with, well, you mentioned Shout and Twist and Shout.
Shout was a song that, it was an original song written by the Isley Brothers, and nobody, and I mean nobody, could follow them when they did it. Jackie Wilson couldn't follow them. Sam Cooke couldn't follow them. Otis Redding couldn't follow them. Nobody wanted to follow them. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles couldn't follow them. So the Isley Brothers always closed the show because of that song.
You can't top that song.
Because of that song. No. Now you put that, you put Shout and Twist and Shout and Jimi Hendrix playing with the brothers. So forget about it. Don't even bother. You know, because nobody could follow them. Nobody could follow them. You know, and it's a marvelous thing to know that in their roots, I ran into Paul McCartney a few years ago, and we both gave each other bear hugs, and we're both talking to each other ear at the same time. And I said, Paul, you and Ringo and George, John, you guys are just wonderful. And he said, Ernie, if it were not for the Isley Brothers, the Beatles would still be in Liverpool.
Wow. That is high praise.
Yes. Yes. Very gracious of him. And he went on stage and said that in the microphone.
Wow.
And then we performed Twist and Shout, the Isley Brothers, Ronald and I, along with Paul McCartney and John Bon Jovi, Jennifer Hudson, Usher, Richie Sambora. We did Twist and Shout. It's the first time that song had ever been performed by Isley Brothers and the Beatles at the same time. So it was great.
That is so. I mean, talk about high praise. And it's nice that he said it to the crowd too. It wasn't just a private compliment too. You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Amongst musicians, we all know what it is.
Yeah.
So if it was like Jimi Hendrix, it's like he would know what it is. You know, my brother Kelly would have him if he was around, would have him by our front door, poking him in the ribs, saying, "I told you," or he was watching what he was playing, and Jimmy would be roaring with laughter. "I told you, you see, Ernie was sitting in there, and now he knows how to do it," and Jimmy would just be cracking up, and tears rolling down his face, be laughing so hard.
And you said he would know the person.
You
said Jimmy would be giving you, because once you joined the band and you did that lady, you said Jimmy would be giving you a big bear hug and saying, "Oh, he can do it."
Yeah, he'd be saying, like, "How did you ever learn how to do that? Because you never touched my guitar. You never really asked me any questions. Marvin did."
Yeah.
Marvin would interrupt his practicing, asking questions.
Yeah.
How do you know when to change strings in order to get a note?
Yeah.
And he'd stop practicing and explain that to a 10-year-old.
<That's>
Okay. Yeah, a lot of patience, and many a softball game was interrupted because the band was in the basement and we'd be playing Twist and Shout, and all my friends were in the backyard. We come running into the basement and Jimmy's playing, and he'd hit a note and sustain it and look around like it's flying in the room. And then reach out with his left hand and grab it and stop.
Wow.
And then look over at you and wink.
Oh my God.
he'd be practicing, but he'd go into some of the stage persona, in the rehearsal.
Man,
would be like, "Wow, this guy."
You guys should have had him during your little, softball games in the backyard. You should have had Jimmy play the open it with the national anthem for you. Like Woodstock.
Well, yeah, but at that time, music, you say, like, March of 1963.
Yeah.
That's pre-Beatles.
Right.
That's Dick Clark.
Yeah.
American Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Anka.
Right, right.
Elvis, Fabian. It's a whole other genre. Frankie Avalon,
mm-hmm.
Connie Francis, stuff going on at that time. And, of course, when the Beatles showed up, it changed everything. Changed everything.
Yeah.
You know? And it never went back to what it was once they showed up. It never went back. It only went forward. And after the Beatles, of course, in 64 eventually, in May of 67 was Monterey. And Jimi Hendrix made his debut, you know.
Yeah, and the rest,
there.
The rest is history.
Yeah, and the rest is kind of like, well, you know, history. So, but something, all you know, everything happens in a chronological order. And, you know, that happened when it was time to happen. And it's a marvelous thing.
Absolutely. And I mean, and I want our list. I mean, everyone holds up Jimmy, but I want our listeners to really. I mean, we got to hold the Isleys up on the same level, man. You guys were just as influential and important as we've heard throughout this interview. So thanks for all your guys' body of work over there. And I love that. I love that you and Ron have been able to keep it going. And I mean, even you. Oh God, I'm trying to even think. What was it? Oh, Contagious is what it was called. In the recent years,
yeah.
You guys got another, you know, chart topping hit for a whole new generation. Take me into that,
yeah.
And how you kind of, you know, reached a new generation with that.
Oh, that was R. Kelly's mom was a music connoisseur, and her favorite group was the Isley Brothers, and obviously that had an influence on him. And we were working on a record that R. Kelly was producing in Miami at the time. And one day we came in, and it was something he was working on called Keep It on the Down Low. And he paused and said, Ronald, I was wondering if you would, you know, contribute a little something vocally on this track. And Ronald said, yes, I will. And he said, Ernie, I was wondering if you would, you know, play some guitar, you know, your tone and all that and style on this track. And I said, sure, no problem. And then he started talking about, he had this idea for a video with this character of Mr. Biggs, and he was curious if Ronald would portray it in the video, portray Mr. Biggs. And Ronald said yes. And when Ronald said yes, R. Kelly like lost it in terms of excitement and enthusiasm. He said, man, this is going to be a video about this guy's bodyguard, Mr. Biggs' bodyguard. He's got his woman. He's leaving town. He wants me to show her a good time, taking her shopping, out to dinner, et cetera. And, you know, and I get involved with his lady. And he's talking like a mile a minute. This man, I can see this man. I know it's gonna be huge. I know it's gonna be great. Turned out that it was.
Yeah, seriously.
And they revisited it. Then we revisited it with Contagious on our record, and you know, R. Kelly was there again, and I think didn't leave him in the desert this time,
right,
with his lady bro, but but. It's kind of a standoff. And, of course, there's all of it. There's Bone Thugs and Harmony sampled Make Me Say It Again, Girl, for See You at the Crossroads. Ice Cube sampled Footsteps in the Dark with Today Was a Good Day.
Yeah. Explain our listeners of the how Crossroads was actually a sample of you guys.
Well, you know, they Bone Thugs and Harmony had this song, and they used the Isley Brothers' Make Me Say It Again,
mm-hmm,
as the musical background, and they rapped over top of it.
Bum, 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 bum.
And, yeah, and that was the biggest record that year in the industry, was Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah.
See You at the Crossroads.
Remember it well.
And, but, yeah, and, of course, you know, like, Yeah, you start, you know, you go through American popular music or rock and roll or whatever, and you see Isley Brothers in the Fine Print. Everybody knows Shout. Mm-hmm. Everybody has performed it.
Everywhere. Every wedding, every year a wedding's played. Every time. And people all dancing on the floor.
You don't have a wedding without that.
No.
You don't have a wedding without Shout.
You don't have Wedding Crashers without Shout.
Right. Yeah, the movie.
Yeah.
The movie. So, you know, between that and Twist and Shout, you know, everybody knows those songs. They're like 1-2 punch of rock and roll. It's like Happy Birthday. Mm-hmm. So we've been fortunate to have that kind of influence and impact on the industry across generations, and our style and music have changed. I mean, we just come out with a new CD with Carlos Santana. So, I mean, that's another moment. And Carlos is a fan, and of course we're a fan of his, and be able to do something together, and, you know, it's great. It's just coming out. So, you know, all that considered, you know, and then we got this thing coming up at Wolf Trap on behalf of Isley Brother house guest and employee, who later on grew into a electric guitar deity. And he perpetual, you know, the electric guitar, once he came on the scene, was never the same. It'll never drift back to whatever it was,
yep.
You know, but his contribution is indelible in regards to that.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we hope everyone comes out and checks out the show on Friday at 8 p.m. at Wolf Trap. Just in closing, why should our folks come out? You know, what gets them there?
Why should they come out?
Yeah.
Well, do you like music? start with, the most simplistic of questions, like, do you like music?
Yeah, that's all you need.
You come to this thing and get illuminated. Because you'll find out, there's fire and there's purple haze, but there's all this other stuff, including, I didn't know Jimi Hendrix's first experience in the recording studio was with the Isley Brothers.
Right, exactly.
I didn't know that.
Exactly.
Well, I didn't know that chord that he was playing, that E chord in Purple Haze, that he was playing that on Testify. In 1964, I didn't know that.
Right.
I didn't know that Jimmy was on Move Over and Let Me Dance in 1965. Huh. Isley Brothers, that's pre-1967 and pre-Monterey Pop. So, you come there and get illuminated.
Yep.
You find out a lot about his journey and his contribution, which is major.
Well, there you go. We get entertainment and illumination. I love it. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, these stories are fantastic. Our listeners are going to love hearing these, about you growing up and him being in the room on the couch, and it's going to be great. So thanks
great,
so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jason.
All right. Ernie Isley on WTOP. Everybody, come out to Wolf Trap on Friday for the Jimi Hendrix birthday anniversary. Thank you so much.
Okay, man. Take care.